Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, with open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. That's our telephone number. Hit me up on Snapchat, SnapJHood, or on Instagram, IGJHood, as we broadcast live from our First Midwest Bank studio. We will hear from Brad Edwards, who covers college football like a blanket for ESPN. You hear him on ESPN's College Game Day every fall here on ESPN 1000. We'll hear from Brad, our college football analyst, coming up at 8:10. Also, we'll hear from Jeff Dickerson, who covers the Bears for ESPN 1000. Don't forget now, the NFL draft, it takes place next Thursday. You can hear full coverage, wall-to-wall coverage of the NFL draft right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So we'll hear from Brad. We'll also hear from JD. If you're a Bears fan or if you're one that's interested in the draft and what the Bears could do in the draft, stay by your listening device and check out Brad Edwards and Jeff Dickerson this hour here on ESPN 1000. For those of you that heard my conversation with the late Chet Kopic, an interview that I did late last year, you'll be able to hear more of that conversation I had with Chet coming up at 9:30 tonight. So if you just heard about it and you missed it, we have more to provide you. It's all on the Under the Hood podcast, by the way, whether it's on Stitcher or SoundCloud or iTunes, wherever you download your podcast, look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. It's episode number 3. On our podcast, you can hear the interview in its entirety. But we had a great conversation about so many things in his career, the ups and downs of his career. As we learned this morning, he passed away from a tragic car accident in Savannah, Georgia. We'll hear more from Chet coming up at 9:35 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So if you're looking to hear that, bookmark that time. I think that you'll enjoy our one-on-one conversation. So, as I mentioned, we'll hear from Brad Edwards in just a moment. A couple of things here. Something I didn't get to, because we've been so busy. We've had so much NFL draft, and we got so many Cubs and Sox and other issues. I saw this story from Jesse Rogers the other day from ESPN.com regarding Carl Edwards Jr. And it says, racist messages to Cubs Edwards investigated. So Major League Baseball is investigating racist Instagram messages sent to Chicago Cubs pitcher Carl Edwards Jr. The team also reacted to the messages, which came after Edwards struggled in his first few appearances of the season before he was demoted to AAA Iowa. We were shocked by the racist profanity-laced social media message sent to Carl Edwards Jr. earlier this month. According to Theo Epstein, we have vehemently condemned the content of the message and are supporting Major League Baseball's investigation to identify the person that's responsible for it. Edwards was demoted after compiling a 32.40 ERA in 4 appearances this season. He declined to comment through a spokeswoman for the Iowa Cubs. Lee Long, who is the agent for Carl Edwards, said that while he was mentioned being upset at social media attacks in the past, the recent incidents are completely beyond normal fan frustration. This is not the last time that we have heard about this. And the only other thing I could think of from the Cubs standpoint is when Dusty Baker was the manager. And I know that there are some that do what I do for a living that try to poo-poo it and say that, like, it's not real. Where are these letters coming from? It wasn't Instagram. It was letters back then with Dusty Baker. This is when being a fan is over the top and ignorant. It's one thing for you to have an emotional investment in a team. It's another thing to be able to speak about Carl Edwards from a racial standpoint because he's not giving you the results that you think that you deserve as a fan, as if you really deserve results as a fan from Carl Edwards Jr. You want results from the team even more so than just one individual player, but because he's black, he is singled out. And I'm here to tell you that that is not right. I'm here to tell you that it's about time for people that are these keyboard warriors to pay the price for the words that they put out there. We just can't keep chalking it up to, oh, that guy's ignorant, oh, that guy's a fool, and then just let these people go off scot-free. Listen, I get it. Everybody gets it that is in the public eye. It's unfortunate, and it should not happen. And I know that maybe you've never received messages like that from someone that you didn't know, but I'm here to tell you that there should be consequences for people that do things like this. Carl Edwards Jr. is trying like every other Cub, and he didn't want to get off to the start. Carl Edwards Jr., I mentioned Carl Edwards Jr. get off to a slow start. I didn't like what I saw, especially when he was working hard in spring training to turn things around. So I understand that from my standpoint, I'm watching what you're watching. Yes, he struggled, but should he have racial epithets written on his Instagram because he's struggling? No. You go after him because he's not doing what you want him to do. You say, hey, you know what? You got to get better. You get that. That's part of fandom. And that's over the top. But I would accept that more than someone that is writing these things on his Instagram trying to get a rise out of him. And it makes you feel better. It's got to be some kind of consequences for these things. It has to be. If that person's found out, you got to find that guy. Find that guy, and there has to be something done. Because that's just not right for anybody. How about this? I was watching earlier today.
The Chicago White Sox. How about that?
Watching the White Sox earlier today, they lost 9-7. And we're going to hear from Rick Renteria, the manager for the White Sox, in just a moment. So I did the White Sox today, and I know that I said last year, and I said already early this year, that it seems as though when the White Sox play, because they don't have enough offense in the lineup, that if they are behind, it would be hard for them to come back. They made me out of a liar today, because the White Sox, even though they lost 9-7, I will take my cap off to the White Sox in that they battled against this Detroit Tigers team. They battled against the Tigers. And you didn't get a lot in the top of the lineup. It went 0 for 15. But you did get Tim Anderson coming through again. Anderson 2 for 5 with 2 runs. His slash line, by the way, is 422, 439, 656. TA7? All right, let's get it going here. You're looking for the breakout party from Tim Anderson. I was watching the Major League Baseball Network, Brian Kenny with the hands, moving the hair around side to side and just getting hyped up about TA7. He liked what he saw, too. So now Tim Anderson's starting to get a little bit more pub. And, of course, as we discussed yesterday, that whole fight thing and the whole skirmish that took place with the Royals that put him front and center. But I think that people are looking at Anderson now with those numbers and like, oh, Tim Anderson, where's this been? Hopefully what we see here on April 18th is something we could see in September 18th. That kind of consistency. So I like that. I also like Wellington Castillo coming out of nowhere with a home run today in the eighth inning. There was some fight to the White Sox, even though it was a loss. The thing that fell out the bottom for the White Sox was the bullpen. Here's a great question. You ready for this? Honestly, is Carson Fulmer a Major League Baseball pitcher? Now, I know that his check says he's a Major League Baseball pitcher, but I'm asking for real. Is Carson Fulmer a guy that you can look at and say, you know what, that guy is going to be something. I don't know what he is. Carson Fulmer, to me, is what we used to, and I don't know if they use this phrasing, the 4A type guy. Like, good enough to be out of AAA, but not good enough to be in the big leagues. And that's kind of what I see from Carson Fulmer. So the bottom fell out from the pitching standpoint from Herrera and Fulmer. Nova stayed in there pretty well. You know, 6 1/3, 11 hits, 6 runs he surrendered. But it was a back-and-forth game. Nice battle between the two with the Tigers and the White Sox. But the Sox now are 7-11 on the season and 4-5 on the road. But Renteria was a little bit more optimistic about Fulmer.
Yeah, stuff is good. It's just, you're right. He started out with the boop hit. And then just seemed to lose his command arm side a little bit. You know, those guys were trying to bunt. He just wasn't able to get it to the side of the plate they needed to in order to allow them either to execute their play or miss, you know. But his stuff, yeah, his stuff is good. His fastball was, I think, up to 94. His breaking ball looked sharp. Even the last one they struck out the last hitter with was pretty good. So we'll see if we can get him to, you know, kind of settle down and command the strike zone and see if we can take advantage of the stuff that he does have.
No, it wasn't. It's not good. Don't lie to me, Renteria. Tricky Ricky. Cordell, by the way. Cordell. In the minors, comes back 3-for-4 with the run. Hats off, Cordell. Can you do that like in a month from now and 2 months from now? He was good. He was able to hit a home run as well to help the White Sox cause. But again, falling short 9-7. By the way, we talked about TA7 earlier, Tim Anderson. He's got goals, you know, and you want Anderson goals.
Yeah. I'm not a big person that like to share my goals, but, you know, the ultimate goal is to be all-star and all of the above. So why not aim for all of them? So, yeah, man, I got goals set out for myself, and, you know, I'm going to achieve them. You know, that's how I want to go about it. I want to achieve my goals and, you know, just put myself in the best situation to be successful with this season. And, you know, just the ultimate goal is just really to have fun. And I think if I have fun, the rest of it will just fall up under the umbrella.
So some thoughts there from Tim Anderson from my Under the Hood podcast. Great long conversation with Tim Anderson as well. Glad that you're with me here on this Thursday night. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Time to talk about the NFL draft. You know, the NFL draft takes place next Thursday. You can hear coverage of night one of the draft right here on ESPN 1000. Let's turn to a man who knows his draft. Let's go to Brett Edwards from ESPN. Don't forget the College Game Day show takes place every fall right here on ESPN 1000. And Brad joins me, Jonathan Hood, right here on ESPN 1000. Brad, as always, I appreciate your time. Let's start with the quarterbacks. Let's tell me about Kyler Murray. What stood out most about what you saw from Kyler Murray this past season?
I think people look at Murray, and of course, the thing you notice immediately is his athleticism. I mean, there's a reason that he was a top 10 pick in baseball as an outfielder. Is because the guy is obviously a great athlete, and he kind of looked at him as a five-tools player. And you see some of that when you watch him play football. It's just his speed. I mean, it's not just, you know, a lot of times we look at a quarterback and we talk about, you know, him being a dual threat and that he can run. Kyler Murray is a dynamic runner. And yet that's not the reason, I mean, obviously, because that's not going to be enough in the NFL, but even in college, that wasn't what made him so great. I mean, certainly it's something that defenses have to worry about, but, even with his height, being less than ideal, he was really good at throwing from the pocket. And I think that's what surprised a lot of people. And it took, a good number of people, the bulk of the season to recognize, like, you know what, this guy is actually really good throwing from the pocket and very accurate at doing it. And so, I think certainly in the NFL, you got to get creative and find ways to use his athleticism to your advantage. But obviously, if you can't throw from the pocket, you can't succeed in the NFL. But I don't think there's any reason to believe that he can't do that. And it'll be fun to see, you know, whatever team takes him, what they do with him. But I will say this. At the time when he made the decision to go all in on the NFL, I thought it was the right decision. But at the same time, I didn't imagine that there was any chance he's going to go first overall. I thought there was a chance he could be the first quarterback taken. First overall kind of seemed like a stretch to me. But then, you start hearing stuff, and now all of a sudden, I think it's to a lot of people, it seems like a foregone conclusion.
So was your thought coming in that Nick Bosa was the best player that would be leaving college to go to the draft?
Yeah, I felt like between Bosa and Quinnen Williams, you know, there's so much value on defensive line, obviously, at the next level that was, I guess if the best player had been at a different position, you know, I would have thought, okay, I could see the possibility that a quarterback ends up going number one because, probably not going to take a receiver with that pick or a linebacker or something like that. But when you got two guys rated that high who are on the defensive line where they can be real difference makers, especially a pass rusher like Bosa, it seems like that would be more likely than someone, you know, taking a little bit of a leap of faith in a quarterback who doesn't have ideal measurables. And let's be honest, didn't have a ton of experience as a college quarterback. He really only started for one full season. And so that was kind of why I wasn't thinking that he was going to be a number one overall pick, but looks like that could very well be the case.
One other thing on Murray, Brad, I guess one thing we could look at with Kyler Murray, if he is drafted by Arizona at one, Cliff Kingsbury is the new head coach for Arizona. So because of Kingsbury's, his thought about offense and some of the innovations that he brought as a head coach with Texas Tech, maybe he can get even more out of Murray. What do you think of that pairing, if that's going to be the case?
Yeah, I mean, look, Cliff Kingsbury's problem was never his teams being able to score, and it was never his quarterback's, ability to produce. It was his defenses couldn't stop anybody, and in that league, they just got outscored a lot. And so I think it'll be fascinating to see what he does. I mean, I'm guessing just because of, just because he is just so much a college coach, that there's going to be an even heavier college element to his style of offense than what you're already seeing, seep into the NFL in recent years. And so, I would guess that they're going to move him around a lot. Or at least that's what Kingsbury would do with Murray. Try to get him outside the pocket where he's at least a threat to run if he chooses to. Who knows? I don't know exactly what to make of it, but he played in a system that was pretty wide open, but he was also a guy that, you saw him make a lot of the throws that you want an NFL quarterback to make. It wasn't simply just, dump the ball off to guys and let them get a lot of yards after the catch. He was able to make some really difficult throws.
College football analyst Brad Edwards with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. The other quarterback I wanted to ask you about is Dwayne Haskins. Being here from Big Ten country, saw a lot of Haskins. There's a feeling from some that Haskins will have maybe the better career than Murray based on how Haskins performed. What do you remember about Haskins at Ohio State?
Yeah, I thought Haskins improved a lot in the second half of the season. Now, I know he looked really good like the first couple weeks and people got very excited. But there was a stretch in the middle of the season where I was having my doubts about him, being able to really make all the throws consistently. That especially the game that actually bothered me the most was the game against Penn State, which on paper you would say that he led them to a fourth quarter comeback, and he had a couple of touchdown passes. But if you're watching closely, you're seeing that it's mostly the product of yards after the catch. And the thing I remember after that game was looking back at his downfield passing. And if I remember correctly, he did not complete a pass more than 10 yards beyond the line of scrimmage in that whole game. And like that was concerning to me. And then you started to see a lot more of the downfield stuff and his ability to throw accurately a little bit deeper. If I do have a question about him, though, it is still, can he do that at the NFL level? It's not a question of arm strength. But if you just look at Ohio State's offense and you watch them play a lot, they had so much success with running crossing routes with superior athletes. They would, just kind of get the ball in their hands just a couple yards beyond the line of scrimmage, and they'd basically design the play to kind of clear out room for them, and they would just, with their speed and athleticism, make plays in the open field. And look, you don't throw for the amount of yardage and the number of touchdowns he did just doing one thing. You can't do that as a one-trick pony. But he did have a whole lot of passing yardage that was, let's just say he wasn't throwing it very far downfield. Right. And so I think I have more questions about him. Obviously, he's got better size than Murray does, but just because of the types of routes that he threw most often are things that probably aren't going to work all that well in the NFL.
You mentioned Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama. How impressed were you with him as a pass rusher? Because there are thoughts that he could be a top three pick, and as you mentioned, he was so explosive that he can be considered one of the top players in this year's draft in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy who was a real surprise coming in because he was a first-year starter. He had played a little bit, but not a ton as a backup the year before, and just a guy that most people outside of that locker room didn't know much about. And what really jumps out at you is his quickness. You know, is it just right off the ball? You'd see a number of times where when you go back and you watch a play over, you know, you'd see that the ball is snapped, and often the next guy on the line to react after the center was Quinnen Williams. I mean, he's moving before any of his fellow defensive linemen. He's moving before the guards and the tackles are moving. And it's not just moving, but he's getting into the backfield quickly. And so it is, I don't know, it's always tough to pass rush from the interior of the line, more challenging than coming from the outside. But if you look at his numbers, his rate of getting pressure was pretty impressive. Now, I would say one of the, you know, maybe the least impressive games he had all season was the national championship game. I was expecting him to be a major factor in that game. The few plays that Alabama made in that game were mostly him, but he didn't get the pressure I was expecting him to. But for the rest of the year, I mean, he was one of the you couldn't watch an Alabama game without noticing him. And so I'll be interested to see you know what people at the NFL level make of him because certainly against the run he wreaked a lot of havoc and he showed potential on passing downs, but I don't know that he's someone that you would draft him just simply because of what he can do as a pass rusher. But he's it's his quickness off the ball that I think really separates him. He's definitely a different type of defensive tackle from that standpoint.
Okay, a couple of Bears questions for you, Brad, because even though the Bears do not draft until the third round, it'll be late for them because of picks that they made, because Khalil Mack is part of the Bears, so you got to be able to give up something to Oakland, so that's why the Bears don't have to worry about the draft so much. But there are still a few holes that need to be filled around Mitch Trubisky. Here in the offseason, Jordan Howard was traded to Philadelphia. The Bears felt that Jordan Howard, the kid from Indiana, they felt that he was not catching the ball enough. Like, he would run the football. He was never explosive, but he was just a solid back. But I think that Nagy wanted something more. So I will ask you about Damian Harris, the running back from Alabama, who could be there. Anything that you remember about Harris with Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, Harris is one of those guys that doesn't really jump off the page at you or jump off the screen at you, either one. I mean, his numbers don't blow you away. His athleticism doesn't blow you away, but he's just very consistent. And I think what you really – I mean, first of all, he seems just from everything that I've been exposed to have great character, which is not just, you know, someone who's going to represent the team really well, but I think he's going to be an asset in the locker room wherever he goes. But I think you saw from his sophomore year to his junior year, the work that he put in order to get faster. And he always had, you know, good, you know, running ability, but he was lacking breakaway speed. And I still wouldn't say he's a speedster, but I think there was a noticeable difference in his ability to make long runs in his last two seasons because of some of the work that he had put in order to get faster, in order to lose a little bit of weight and do that. He is probably an above average receiver for a running back. I don't know that I would put him in Josh Jacobs' category as a receiving back, but I think he's solid in that area. And I mean, he's one of those guys who just strikes me as being a second option. I don't see Damian Harris as a primary back who's going to be getting the bulk of the carries, but I do see him as a guy who could have a long career, just, you know, being able to, you know, take a few carries here, catch a few passes there. That's kind of what he looks like to me. Not a real big guy. So like I said, there's nothing about his measurables that's going to jump off the page at you, but I'd just say he's solid.
So let me tell you what's been happening in the last week or so. So I talked to Jim Brandstatter, the veteran voice of the Michigan Wolverines, just last night, and he's pretty optimistic about Michigan for this upcoming season based on its schedule. What do you think?
Yeah, look, so last year, the playoff predictor kind of raised some eyebrows when it had Notre Dame going into the season as the team fourth most likely to make the playoff. Mm-hmm. And look, you can say it got lucky, whatever you want to say, but that was a pretty good way to debut. It was Clemson, Alabama, Notre Dame at four, and then I believe Oklahoma was number seven, seventh most likely to make the playoff. So it did pretty well the first year, and now Michigan is third most likely to make the playoff behind Clemson and Alabama again. And look, I get it that there were a lot of people going into the game last year saying, if Michigan can't beat Ohio State this year, I don't know when they're going to do it. Because it did feel like going into that all of the advantages were to Michigan, and we saw what happened on the field. And I know it sounds strange to say the same thing again a few months later, but I think once you kind of take a step back and you look at the way everything played out, I would say it's still true, which is that if Michigan can't beat Ohio State this year, I don't know when they're going to do it. Because that is the one game on the schedule that you still have to just question because of the recent history in that series. And yet, we have to acknowledge Ohio State lost a first-ballot Hall of Fame head coach, and they're replacing him with a guy who has three games of head coaching experience. They lost a starting quarterback who put up one of the best seasons in the history of the Big Ten, and they're replacing him with a guy who's never started a college football game. And on top of that, Ohio State goes to Michigan. And so having that game in Ann Arbor, along with, like you mentioned, the rest of the schedule, the way it lays out with mm-hmm. with Notre Dame also coming there, this is their chance. And, sure, they've got a lot of really good players to replace on defense, but I think their offense should be really good. And I'm a little uneasy as to how much more the playoff predictor likes Michigan more than Ohio State. I would think that, like, in my mind, they're a lot closer than that. But yeah, Michigan is the very clear favorite to win the Big Ten, according to our metrics. I don't know that they're as clear-cut in my mind, but there's a lot of stuff to like about Michigan. And look, if the Ohio State series had not been what it has been over the last 10-plus years, I don't think we'd be looking at Michigan the same way, but I just think there's this reluctance to believe, or skepticism, you know, as far as them actually winning that last game when it finally gets there.
And lastly, talk to Ryan Harris, the radio voice of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish on the radio side. And he and I went to the spring game this past weekend, and so optimism there as well with Notre Dame, a good feeling that a lot of people around there feeling that they could take another step this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, certainly they got to be excited coming off of last year and having some good pieces back. Now this is where the schedule becomes an issue, because mm-hmm. last year that schedule was pretty friendly. And look, you never know. I mean, there are always times that we look at these schedules before the season starts and like, okay, that's an easy win, that's an easy win, that one will be a tough one. And then some of the teams that we thought were going to be good are not, and some of the teams that we thought would be kind of average end up being good. So you never know this for sure. But as we sit here in April, at Georgia and at Michigan, at Stanford, it shouldn't be a piece of cake either at the end. Mm-hmm. And so with those three games on the road, I think it's tough to get too excited about Notre Dame's chance of getting back to the playoff. Because, I mean, let's be realistic. They're not getting in with two losses. Especially, I mean, look, no one's gotten in the playoff with two losses yet. But to get in with two losses and not be a conference champion, which Notre Dame obviously can't be, it seems almost impossible. So they're going to have to win two of those three games to even have a chance. And I think, you know, depending on the year and how things play out elsewhere, I don't even know that a one-loss Notre Dame is a lock. I know that people who have followed the sport for a long time say, there's no way the selection committee is leaving out a one-loss Notre Dame. I don't know. I mean, you put them up against a one-loss team that's a conference champion. If it comes down to that for the last spot, I don't think it's a slam dunk. And so you look at the rest of that schedule, there aren't there aren't a lot of top 25 teams on there based on what I think, you know, that some of these are going to be. Like, I mean, outside of those road games. So to me, that's what it really comes down to, especially Georgia and Michigan. They're going to have to find a way to win one of those two games in a hostile environment. And if they can't do that, they'll end up having a good season, but it'll be disappointing compared to last year.
Well, you heard it here, here first, folks. Brad Edwards tamping down the expectations for the Fighting Irish this year. Well, I tell you
of all people know, you don't just walk in between the hedges and roll your helmet out there and think you're going to come out with a victory, right?
Well, I see that's one loss for sure. There's no way they're coming out of Athens with a victory. That's not happening. I just thought the Michigan and Stanford will be interesting, but if it's one loss, if that's going to be the one. If they run the table the rest of the way, good for them. But if one loss is not good enough for them to get into the Final Four, then this is what you deal with. I mean, it was bad enough that you had 60% Georgia fans in South Bend the last time these two met. And now them going to Athens, that's going to be an uphill climb for sure.
Yeah. I love these games. And, Notre Dame being an independent can play several of them in a year. But as college football fans, we love to see these teams that you don't normally see on the field together. And this will be a fun one.
As always, Brad, I appreciate your time. We'll talk in the fall.
All right. Sounds good, Jonathan. Take care.
Thank you. Brad Edwards with us as we talk about the NFL draft and college football. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Jonathan Hood.
So pay attention to my word, because it's the true fruit. Meditation is the mind that brings the youth. Yep. It's like a verse you could never read out of a book. Dropping the line in your mind like a fish hook.
On ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you're with us. We will celebrate the great life of the godfather of sports talk radio in Chicago, Chet Kopick. If you missed our conversation earlier, you will be able to hear a portion of our sit-down, one-on-one interview. It might have been one of the last interviews that Chet did. You know, he passed away due to a severe car accident taking place a few days ago, died because of the injuries that he suffered. And we will talk about the godfather of sports talk radio coming up in a little bit less than an hour from now, 9:30. You'll be able to hear our one-on-one conversation. So let me tell you quickly about the Under the Hood podcast. And we're going to hear from Jeff Dickerson, his thoughts and our thoughts about the Bears NFL schedule that broke yesterday. Do you realize that you can catch the Under the Hood podcast, my show, 11 different ways, whether it's Google Play, whether it's TuneIn app, whether it's Stitcher, SoundCloud, CastBox, whether it's iTunes, Apple Music, whether it's Spotify, Player FM, Listener Notes, Podchaser, wherever you download your podcast, look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. We've got great content there, great conversations, as well as some of the shows that you might have missed. That's where you go and find Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, download it, and listen to it whenever you get a chance. So glad that you are with us here live, though, weeknight 7 to 10 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So we turn to Jeff Dickerson. JD and I talking about the Bears and the schedule release that took place yesterday as the Bears will start their season on September 5th against the Green Bay Packers. Primetime affair. And JD, as you take a look at the games for the Chicago Bears, clearly the National Football League is into some of the razzle dazzle and some of the trickery that the Bears have had in last year. They want to put that on primetime television.
Absolutely. More Bradley Soule catching touchdown passes or Akeem Hicks rushing for scores. But, I mean, look, it's a tougher schedule. Now, we say that now, but every year you know that things happen during a season and teams that you feel like are going to be really good going into a year sometimes are not as good. The Bears could suffer injuries in preseason. What if they lose their quarterback or Khalil Mack or something like that? But just looking at it on paper, I mean, to open up you know, opening up the NFL regular season against Green Bay on that Thursday night, and then a Monday night game already in week three, and then you're talking about a really tough stretch. To me, week seven is where the Bears get down to business with the Saints, the Chargers, and the Eagles.
Tough.
And then you've got, you know, the Lions, put them to the side, and then a Sunday night game against the Rams. I mean, that talk about a tough 4 out of 5 weeks. And then I look at that final month of the season, Jonathan, when they're making their playoff push. You got the Cowboys at home on Thursday night. It's always tricky going to Green Bay, especially in late December. You don't know what the Packers are going to be with new head coach Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers and if that relationship is going to work. Then you've got the you know, the protege versus the mentor with Nagy against Andy Reid Sunday night, week 16 against the Chiefs, and then week 17 again in Minnesota. They beat the doors off the Vikings last year in the last game of the regular season to keep Minnesota out. You know, we'll see what the Vikings do to bounce back, but that is a two tough divisional road games, and then the Cowboys and the Chiefs in prime time makes up your final four games. That certainly is interesting.
Jeff Dickerson covers the Bears for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So as we always do, as you know how we do it every year, my friend, I just first blush with the pen, and I know your column's going to be posted pretty soon here on ESPN.com as far as how you see the schedule. I just went through the schedule, and I wrote down 10-6. and here, and that's, again, playoff ready, 10-6. Yeah. And of course, by the time we get to Bourbonnais, again, I'll change it, and then after Bourbonnais, I'll change it again. but first blush with the pen, I wrote down 10-6. And here's where the rubber meets the road, my friend.
Okay.
So I have four. The Bears are going to be 4-1 before the bye.
Okay.
Because Denver's trying to figure themselves out. Washington's trying to figure themselves out offensively. I think the Bears can get Minnesota close game. Raiders still not sure who they are, even though Antonio Brown's with the Raiders. I think there's going to be a loss against the Packers opening night. 4-1 into the bye. And, of course, we know the bye is very difficult defensively, so we got to worry about them. You've been covering the bye for a long time. I mean, that's a tough team, are they not?
I mean, the bye under Nagy and Mark Trestman was the greatest thing ever. The bye under John Fox was nowhere near as competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But that bye last year was awfully sweet. You got to watch out for the police blotter during the bye week. But the Bears seem to be okay in that regard. There hasn't been a whole lot of trouble off the field lately.
Out of the bye, you talk about how difficult it is with Saints Chargers at Philadelphia. That is two losses right there with the Saints and the Eagles, and then the win against the Chargers. I just think I think that you're going to find out what the Saints are about offensively, and it's going to be tough because I just think that the Saints are going to come in here and do what they do offensively. Eagles, a very difficult place to play. Mm-hmm. Win against the Lions, loss against the Rams, close game on NBC, beating the Giants, beating the Lions, and that Dallas game. I struggled with, and Felix and I were talking about this upstairs. I struggled with this game because I don't know, even though it's at home Thursday night, I gave him the L, but I'm still not sure about that on December 5th.
So our assignment changed a little bit this year. You will be disappointed. Remember in the past, I would actually predict wins and losses and then give you like a box score?
Sure.
Like a fake, you know, here's what's going to happen. Aaron Rodgers throws for 400 yards is... You know, Jay Cutler is picked off three times in a Bears 38-14 loss.
And, and usually accurate.
Fairly accurate sometimes. But now they just want us because there were a lot of complaints, not from me, but there were a lot of complaints that we really shouldn't be, you know, making all these fantasy picks here. They just want a win or a loss, okay? So first blush with the pen.
Mm-hmm.
I also have them 10-6.
10-6 also. So the end of the schedule, win against the Packers, loss against the Chiefs, win against Minnesota. And again, that's still playoffs to me, Jeff. I'm just saying that you have to factor in any NFL schedule, what is the odd loss, like the giant loss last year for the Bears, the odd, like, wait, no Trubisky, what's going on? Right. Kind of weird. Like, you got to factor those losses in. Now, this might more than likely is going to be wrong, but you got to factor in at least one or two of those.
Here's where we differ a little bit. I, too, have the Bears 4-1 going into the bye, but I do have them beating the Packers in week one, and here's why. I worry more about Green Bay in week 15 than I do in week 1. Mm-hmm. Because in week 1, Aaron Rodgers and LaFleur are going to still be figuring each other out. I think the Bears get Green Bay at home on that Thursday night. I think they lose to the Packers later in the year at Lambeau. The curveball loss I have is in week 2 to Vic Fangio, who knows all the secrets at Hallis Hall. He knows the weaknesses. He knows the strengths. I just figure if you're going to lose one early, I don't think they lose at Washington. I think they can beat the Vikings at home, the Raiders in London. I mean, oh boy.
Yeah.
They really should win that game.
Mm-hmm.
But that Broncos game, I think that will be the tricky one with the former defensive mastermind as the new Denver head coach. I do have a loss to the Saints. I feel it's unfortunate the Bears get the Saints as early in the season as they do. If that game was in December, I would pick the Bears.
Yeah.
I think because it's earlier, I'll take the Saints. I do think they beat the Chargers. I do have a loss at the Eagles. I think they sweep the series against the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
I think they lose in Los Angeles. I told you I think they lose to the Packers. I think they lose to the Chiefs, but I do think they beat the Vikings in Week 17.
That's a split with the Vikings, by the way?
That's a – no, that is a sweep? Sweep of the Vikings.
Sweep the Lions, sweep the Vikings.
And split with the Packers.
That's, you'll take that, right?
Oh, of course. I mean,
the Bears, yeah.
The Bears have not had a back-to-back division championship since 2005, 2006, the glory days of Lovey back in the day. I think 10-6 gets it done. I do. But, I mean, let's not be foolish here. Again, on paper, this is a much more daunting schedule than what the Bears have had the last couple of seasons. But that's what happens when you – I mean, almost all but two of these opponents are predetermined going into the year. But even those predetermined opponents, there's a lot of good-looking teams right now on paper on the schedule. So I think 10-6 is the pick, but hey, we'll see what happens.
Jeff Dickerson covers the Bears for NFL Nation on ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So when I look at the losses on some of these, Jeff, I look at the prolific offenses. And as I mentioned with you coming in, if Trubisky is the same, I think it's good enough, but it's not where I would say that this is a Super Bowl caliber team. Like the defense, I have no problem with. Even with the no Callahan, a missing piece here or there, the defense should be as solid as they were last year, or maybe even more so, especially if Mac is on the field for the majority of the regular season. But the offensively speaking, all of this we're talking about is predicated on whether or not Trubisky takes a step. And I don't know. That's the great unknown. I don't know what we get with Trubisky, because if he's still that one read quarterback where he's running for his life, that's not going to get it done. Not this year. It didn't get it done a lot in some ways last year. So I'm looking for another step. How do you look at Trubisky, yeah, especially against this schedule?
I think Matt Nagy would be the first to tell you that the offense needs to be more consistent this year. Now, there's a chance that happens because it is the second year of the system and guys should be more comfortable. But to me, you're right. It is the offense. So much of it is the quarterback. I don't know defensively if they can be better this year, Jonathan. I don't know. They were so good last year. That's hard to do. And then you lose your defensive coordinator. All due respect to Chuck Pagano,
mm-hmm,
who's an experienced guy. But, I mean, Vic Fangio had them playing out of their minds on defense. So there's going to be a loss there felt with Fangio no longer in the building. You know, can they be as healthy as they were last year? Sometimes it doesn't work out that way in the NFL. But if the quarterback does grow considerably from year two to year three, then yeah, I think this could be a team that challenges for the playoffs, as long as they get the right kicker in here at some point. That still has to happen. Get a little more depth on the roster. But no, I agree. I mean, to me, it's always been about the quarterback. It's always been about Trubisky. He's the whole key here. They're going to ask him to do more in year two in this system. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have to do more. And if he gets a lot better, then this team could go a lot further than losing that first weekend of the playoffs.
Love that quirky loss against the Broncos. That is really key right there. That's very good.
I slid that in there. Old Vic with the old projector. Showing him Trubisky film. See that there, guys? Huh? staring at the receiver.
I saw this all the time when I was in Chicago. There he is. They're showing how to get Trubisky, getting him on the weak side there, making sure that they're getting him down early and often. A really a disaster on Fox.
He's got his weight belt on. He's in the meeting room. Coach.
That I love that. That's good. Well, you know what? 10-6. Again, first blush, I'll change by the time we get to Bourbon A. It'll probably be up to 11 based on your reporting. And then,
after that first 7-on-7, they're going to be 16-0.
After you based on your reporting, it'll be 11-5. I'm still not sure about the Cowboy game. I'm not sure. And also, I will ask you this about the Vikings on the 29th. Will that game even matter if the Bears have already clinched it? You know, because
yeah, you know what though. But what did they do last year? They went in there last year already clinched.
Yeah,
and they pounded them.
Yeah, because the Vikings quit in that game.
They were embarrassed. They were embarrassed at home, and I thought that was the right mentality. You go for the jugular if you're the Bears. You go into the playoffs with some momentum. They had the Eagles game won, if not for the kicker. So I think that was the right strategy. And after that show we do at Brickstone in Bourbonnais, mm-hmm. and it's like 2 in the morning, I think they might be 14-2 after that show.
I'm not internationally known, but